the hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Thank you so much. Thank you, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, now on the air, broadcasting live out of Chicago, Illinois. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful evening. It's dark outside, but it's great. It's wonderful. It's the sign of fall. I mean, I was outside this morning. I was getting my kid onto the school bus, and it was cold. It was very, very cold. You know, I have to go down there and make sure that he gets on the school bus, because that's the rules of the school bus company, that the parent has to be there in order for their child to be on the get on the bus or the van. And I don't mind doing that. You know, I don't mind doing that. But it was nippy dippy. It was cold, and it's a great day. It's a wonderful day. Thank you for listening. Thank you for podcasting. And thank you for your feedback on the show. That's great. That's wonderful, the feedback. And like I said before, I'm going to change the hours at some point and sometime. So I'm going to have you. So stay tuned for that. All right. We're talking about the analyst of the Democrat. I done made a mistake. It's the Republican debate, not the Democrat debate. So we're going to have to change that. I don't know how I made that screw up there. Somebody screwed it up. It's supposed to be the Republicans debate. Because that's what it is. We're going to make some changes on that. But anyway, it's wrong. It's wrong. It's the Republican debate. It's the Republican third debate on CNBC. And it's a lot to talk about. It really is. This is we're talking about the Republican debate, not the Democratic. We're going to change that as soon as the show is over. This particular show is over. All righty. This is great. I feel good. I couldn't wait all week to get on the show, because I'm basically preparing everything, getting a guest ready for to be on the show. And this is a great time. Okay, we're talking about, as I said, we're talking about the Republican third debate that was on CNBC yesterday, which was October 28th, 2015, not the Democratic debate that was a few weeks ago, okay? So that was this is a horrific mistake, but it has to be made up. Anyway, let's move on. Okay. This was no debate. The Republican debate yesterday, the third debate, this was no debate. I don't know what it was, the clown bus, or I don't know, these people were just, I don't know, there was nothing said. As usual, there was nothing said. All they were talking about was blaming the media for this or that, pivoting, not answering the questions, that they want to answer. And if a question wasn't right, they were afraid to answer, or they couldn't answer, they blamed the moderator. They blame the moderator, questioning, you know. They blame the media, okay? They were criticizing and talking about each other. They know nothing. Ben Carson knows nothing. One of the moderators were trying to tell Ben Carson something that he himself had said that is documented, and he completely told her that he did not say that. He can't explain anything. I don't even know what he said. I don't even bother listening to Ben Carson, because he doesn't. And some of the media people are saying these people can't handle the truth. They can't. It was Carly Fiorina. I mean, since the last two debates, it seems as though she's gotten herself a facelift or something. She didn't have much to say. Only thing she really said of any significance, and that was no significance, is that she would be the one who could beat Hillary Clinton or scare Hillary Clinton. She's not scaring any goddamn body. You know, they dodged questions. They dodged it. They answered the questions the way they wanted to answer them, not the way they were asked. They dodged, ducked, evade during the debate. I don't know if you can call it debate. You can probably call it entertainment or something. The crowd goes wild. Rubio flat out denies, you know, a lot of things. They're liars. You know, they attack the media. Jeb Bush is on life support. He's saying he's not on life support, which he is, because his donors, the people who are funding his campaign, giving him money, they say they're going to stop giving him money if he doesn't do a better job. And he says, well, I'm going to do a better job in the next debate. Jeb Bush is through. He's done, but he you ever heard the expression, that person's dead, but that person just will not lay down? That's Jeb Bush. He's out. He's dead, but he won't go to sleep or whatever. He stumbles badly. He tries to, you know, rip Marco Rubio, and Rubio jumped back in his ass. I'm pretty sure Marco Rubio, his campaign chest is going to rise because of this. People are going to give him lots of money. They're going to take money away from Jeb Bush, you know, because he stumbled badly. If you saw the debate, all they were doing was arguing, bitching with each other, you know, yelling, screaming. This was nothing. This was a bozo bus. This was a bunch of clowns on stage. And I think all of them, every one of them, should be thrown off the stage. They're a joke. This was a train wreck. Fantasy, they're talking about fantasy football. I mean, give me a break. I mean, these people, I mean, even John Kasich, that guy was lying through his teeth. And you know what? This is the second or third, this is the first, second, third debate where they did not talk about, they talked around it. They might said a word or two, but they did not talk or elaborate on issues that are facing America. They didn't talk about gun control. Of course, Republicans hate gun control. If everybody in the damn country died, they would still be steadfast on gun control. They didn't talk about voting rights. And these are the guys who suppressed the votes. Go figure, right? They didn't talk about any issues facing America. They didn't talk about the refugees that's pouring over here from other countries because of their country is a war zone or something. They didn't talk about that. They didn't say a damn thing about the economy, jobs. I think I heard somebody say jobs, but that was probably it. They just mentioned and said the word jobs, but nothing elaborate, nothing substantial. They didn't say anything. It was an embarrassment. I mean, it was a waste of time. 2 hours for nothing? Give me a break. They didn't talk about infrastructure, the roads, the bridges that are in badly need of repair. They didn't talk about that. Middle class, the struggling poor, the minimum wage, none of these things that they talk about. This is an absolute atrocity. This is crazy. They didn't say anything about ISO, the poor, security, Homeland Security, the budget. These people, this was a clown show. They are, if you think about it, matter of fact, it is totally true. They are up there because they are being interviewed by the American public for a job. And that job is for president of the United States. And if you ask me, every one of them failed badly. Talking about the Republican debate, the third debate on CNBC, if I can remember it. And it's just, it was just, they all failed. Ben Carson, I mean, this guy looks like he's he looks like every time you ask him a question, he's in dreamland. You know, he's just answering it the way he wants to answer it. But I think they all failed. You know, I mean, Rubio, Marco Rubio sounds good. He sounds like he was on his game, but the guy completely is not. They're not, if they're not talking about the issues, it's just they don't make it with me. Okay, that don't make it with me. You have to talk about the issues that's facing the American public. You gotta involve the American people, and all these people did was duck, dodge, and evade questions. And if a question comes to them that they don't want to answer, that they can't answer, then they blame it on the moderator. You know, and they torch them, blame them. And they're flat out liars. Most of them just lied their butts off. But the most important thing is they didn't talk about anything. Nothing. You know, and that pisses you off. I mean, because you sit there for 2 hours and all you hear is a lot of yelling, screaming, fighting, disagreement. You're lying. They're lying. You know, criticizing each other, jumping at each other's throat like little kids, you know, and it was just awful. It was
come
awful.
Around the bend, I promise. This one's for Senator Rubio. You've been a young man in a hurry ever since you won your first election in your 20s. You've had a big accomplishment in the Senate, an immigration bill providing a path to citizenship that conservatives in your party hate and even you don't support anymore. Now you're skipping more votes than any senator to run for president. Why not slow down, get a few more things done first, or at least finish what you start?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. That's exactly what the Republican establishment says, too. Why don't you wait in line? Wait for what? This country's running out of time. We can't afford to have another 4 years like the last 8 years. Watching this broadcast tonight are millions of people that are living paycheck to paycheck. They're working as hard as they ever have. Everything costs more, and they haven't had a raise in decades. You have small businesses in America that are struggling. For the first time in 35 years, we have more businesses closing than starting. We have a world that's out of control and has grown dangerous, and a president that is weakening our military and making our foreign policy unstable and unreliable in the eyes of our allies, and our adversaries continue to grow stronger. They say there's no bipartisanship in Washington. We have a $19 trillion bipartisan debt, and it continues to grow as we borrow money from from countries that do not like us to pay for government we cannot afford. The time to act is now. The time to turn the page is now. If we don't act now, we are going to be the first generation in American history that leaves our children worse off than ourselves.
So when the Sun Sentinel says Rubio should resign, not rip us off, when they say Floridian sends you to Washington to do a job, when they say you act like you hate your job, do you?
Yeah, let me say, I read that editorial today with a great amusement. It's actually evidence of the bias that exists in the American media today.
But do you hate your job?
Let me answer your question on the Sun Sentinel editorial today.
Back
in 2004, one of my predecessors to the Senate by the name of Bob Graham, a Democrat, ran for president, missing over 30% of his votes. I don't recall them calling for his resignation.
Is that the standard?
Later that year, in 2004, John Kerry ran for president, missing close to 60 to 70% of his votes. I don't recall the Sun Sentinel endorsed him. In 2008, Barack Obama missed 60 or 70% of his votes, and the same newspaper endorsed him again. So this is another example of the double standard that exists in this country between the mainstream media and the conservative media.
Senator, thank you. John?
Can I bring something up here? Because I'm a constituent of the senator, and I helped him, and I expected that he would do constituent service, which means that he shows up to work. He got endorsed by the Sun Sentinel because he was the most talented guy in the field. He's a gifted politician. But Marco, when you signed up for this, this was a six-year term, and you should be showing up to work. I mean, literally, the Senate, what is it, like a French work week? You get like 3 days where you have to show up? You can campaign or just resign and let someone else take the job. There are a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck in Florida as well. They're looking for a senator that will fight for them each and every day.
I get to respond, right?
30 seconds.
30 right. seconds.
Well, it's interesting. Over the last few weeks, I've listened to Jeb as he's walked around the country and said that you're modeling your campaign after John McCain, that you're going to launch a furious comeback the way he did by fighting hard in New Hampshire and places like that, carrying your own bag at the airport. You know how many votes John McCain missed when he was carrying out that furious comeback that you're now modeling it under?
He wasn't my constituent.
No, Jeb, I don't remember.
Senator.
Well, let me tell you, I don't remember you ever complaining about John McCain's vote record. The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position, and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you.
Well, I've been.
Here's the bottom line. I'm not. My campaign is going to be about the future of America. It's not going to be about attacking anyone else on this stage. I will continue to have tremendous admiration and respect for Governor Bush. I'm not running against Governor Bush. I'm not running against anyone on the stage. I'm running for president because there is no way we can elect Hillary Clinton to continue the policies of Barack Obama.
Hey, thank you, Senator.
I think there's a bigger issue.
John Hartwood, there's a bigger issue here.
We're moving to Governor Bush.
Wow.
Governor, the fact that you're at the fifth lectern tonight shows how far your stock has fallen in this race, despite the big investment your donors have made. You noted recently, after slashing your payroll, that you had better things to do than sit around and be demonized by other people.
What I said was, I don't believe that I would be president of the United States and have the same dysfunction that exists in Washington, D.C. now.
Okay.
Don't vote for me if you want to keep the gridlock in Washington, D.C. But if you want someone who has a proven, effective leadership, that was a governor of a state that transformed the culture there, elect me so I can fight for the American people and change the culture in Washington, D.C.
Okay, it's a question about why you're having difficulty, and I want to ask you in this context. Ben Bernanke, who was appointed Fed chairman by your brother, recently wrote a book in which he said he no longer considers himself a Republican because the Republican Party has given in to know-nothingism. Is that why you're having a difficult time in this race?
The great majority of Republicans and Americans believe in a hopeful future. They don't believe in building walls and a pessimistic view of the future. They're concerned that Washington is so dysfunctional it is holding them back. There are lids on people's aspirations. Think about it. 6.5 million people working part-time. Workforce participation rates lower than they were in 1977. 6 million more people living in poverty than the day that Barack Obama got elected president. And the left just wants more of the same. We have to offer a compelling alternative that is based on hope and optimism and grounded in serious policy, which I've laid out, and you can go get it at Jeb2016.com.
Thank you, Governor.
John, Becky, we're going to get down the line.
We'll get to everyone. Ms. Fiorina, I'd like to ask you a question. You are running for President of the United States because of your record running Hewlett-Packard, but the stock market is usually a fair indicator of the performance of a CEO, and the market was not kind to you. Someone who invested a dollar in your company the day you took office had lost half of that dollar by the day you left. Obviously, you've talked in the past about what a difficult time it was for technology companies, but anybody who was following the market knows that your stock was a much worse performer if you looked at your competitors, if you looked at the overall market. I just wonder, in terms of all of that, you know, if we look back, your board fired you. I just wondered why you think we should hire you now.
You know, the NASDAQ dropped 80%. 80%, and it took 15 years from the NASDAQ to recover. I was recruited to HP to save a company. It was a company that had grown into a bloated, inept bureaucracy that cost too much and delivered too little to customers and shareholders. It had missed, before I arrived, expectations for 9 quarters in a row. As an outsider, I tackled HP's entrenched problems head on. I cut the bureaucracy down to size, reintroduced accountability, focused on service, on innovation, on leading in every market and every product segment. And yes, it was a very difficult time. However, we saved 80,000 jobs. We went on to grow to 160,000 jobs, and scores of technology companies literally went out of business like Gateway, taking all their jobs with them. The truth is, I had to make some tough calls in some tough times. I think actually people are looking for that in Washington now. And yes, I was fired over a disagreement in the boardroom. There are politics in the boardroom as well. And yet the man who led my firing, Tom Perkins, an icon of Silicon Valley, has come out publicly and said, you know what, we were wrong. She was right. She was a great CEO. She'd be a great president of the United States because the leadership she brought to HP is exactly the leadership we need in Washington, D.C.
Mrs. Fiorina, it's interesting that you bring up Mr. Perkins because he said a lot of very questionable things. Last year in an interview, he said that he thinks wealthy people should get more votes than poor people. I think his quote was that if you pay $0 in taxes, you should get 0 votes. If you pay $1 million, you should get 1 million votes. Is this the type of person you want to defend?
Well, this is one of the reasons why Tom Perkins and I had disagreements in the boardroom, Becky. Nevertheless, one of the things that I think people don't always understand is how accountable a CEO actually is. So, you know, I had to report results every 90 days in excruciating detail. I had to answer every single question about every single result and every single projection in public until there were no more questions. And if I misrepresented those results or those projections in any way, I was held criminally liable. Imagine if a politician were held to that standard of account. I will run on my record all day long. And I believe people need a leader who is prepared to make tough calls in tough times and stand up and be held accountable.
Thank you. We're out of time. Thank you, Mrs. Fiorina. Carl.
Senator Cruz, congressional Republicans, Democrats, and the White House are about to strike a compromise that would raise the debt limit, prevent a government shutdown, and calm financial markets that fear of another Washington-created crisis is on the way. Does your opposition to it show that you're not the kind of problem solver American voters want?
You know, let me say something at the outset. The questions that have been asked so far in this debate illustrate why the American people don't trust the media. This is not a cage match. And you look at the questions, Donald Trump, are you a comic book villain? Ben Carson, can you do math? John Kasich, will you insult two people over here? Marco Rubio, why don't you resign? Jeb Bush, why have your numbers fallen? How about talking about the substantive issues people care about? I'm not finished yet. The contrast with the Democratic debate, where every fawning question from the media was, which of you is more handsome and wise?
So this is
and
a
let
question
me be
about
clear.
The debt limit, which you have 30 seconds left to answer, should you choose to do so.
Let me be clear. The men and women on this stage have more ideas, more experience, more common sense than every participant in the Democratic debate. That debate reflected a debate between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. And nobody watching at home believes that any of the moderators has any intention of voting in a Republican primary. The questions that are being asked shouldn't be trying to get people to tear into each other. It should be, what are your substantive solutions to people?
I just want the record to reflect. I asked you about the debt limit, and I got no answer.
You want me to answer that question? I'm happy to answer the question. Let me tell you how that question is.
I've got a question for you.
So you don't actually want to hear the answer, John?
Senator Paul?
You don't want to hear the answer. You just want to hear the insult.
You used your time on something else. Senator Paul?
You're not interested in an answer.
John? Senator Paul, the budget.
That was just totally stupid. You know, I mean, I know you guys probably sat through it and was kind of turning up your rolling your eyes, but I just had to play it. It was just crazy. That was not a debate. That was not a bunch of applicants vying for the top job of the United States. That was a bunch of kids who needed to be disciplined and told to be quiet, shut up, answer the question. You know, these guys were evading the question. He did not answer the question. He took his time saying something else. He took his time bashing the media, criticizing the people on the stage, and they all did. I'm going to say this again. Nothing was said about gun control. No issue nowhere pertaining to America was they talking about. Nothing. No voting rights. And high-ass taxes that we are under in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. Nothing pertaining to the betterment of the United States was said by all of these jackass Republicans. Fiorina got some applause, but still that didn't say anything about voting rights, the middle class, infrastructure, the economy, the budget, all of these things that normal people, grassroots people are suffering under coming from these rogue-ass Republicans, just rogue-ass politicians in general. In general. Okay, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida coolly rebuffed attacks from his one-time mentor Jeb Bush and Senator Ted Cruz of Texas emerged. Okay, they're saying that Jeb Bush, I mean, not Jeb Bush, but Marco Rubio emerged as a champion. Some of them think he won the debate. I don't think any of them won the debate. Testiness and sharpened jabs. They were jabbing each other. Infused the night as struggling candidates like Mr. Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida, and John R. Kasich of Ohio ripped into each other. And when we say ripped, we mean ripped into their less experienced rivals, okay, and tried to portray them as unqualified for the White House. I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to say this again. Unqualified for the – I think each and every one of those people up on that stage was unqualified. They did not know the truth. They could not handle the truth. Some people do not like to hear truth. They want to hear lies. They want to talk about lies. These people, if we elect one of these guys, one of these Republicans as president, we are in trouble. We are in real, real trouble. The free fall verbal assaults, okay, reflected the new volatility of the race that Donald J. Trump dominated for months. It appears to be shifting in favor of candidates like Mr. Rubio, Ben Carson, at first nominating the contest near, and the voters start paying closer attention to the field. This was just awful. This is just awful. And there are so many people writing about this, talking about this. Okay, this is Bill Moyers. He's saying Dr. Ben Carson's rise to the top of the Republican presidential field shows that many Republicans, especially Christian fundamentalists, have decoupled from the real world. Basically, he's saying Dr. Carson is just, he's not with us. You know, and he's proud of it. The more the GOP candidates embrace the anti-knowledge means they know nothing, okay, the more popular they become. Basically, what he's saying, the dumber they are, the more somebody supports them and give them money because they're dumb. That's crazy. You know, and they the pictures they have up here is Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann, and Ben Carson. We know that Michelle Bachmann was a dummy, you know, just like Sarah Palin, you know, but we got these guys on stage now. They're on stage now, and all these people have less knowledge, no knowledge of nothing. But they keep their mouths running and open. And I'm going to say this again, 347-857-1762. I don't think, matter of fact, I know not one of these people have convinced me, and I think it was about 6 or 7, 8, 10 or 12 people on stage, maybe more. I don't think one of them is qualified to be president. Not one. Totally not Ben Carson. Please. You know, because I've been listening to him. I've been watching him. And everything that comes out of his mouth is backwards. You know, he'll say something at one point in one interview. And another interview, he'll deny he said it. You know, so, and I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if you have a different take on it, 347-857-1762. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting on the Wilder Network in my studio. It's dark. I'm near the window, near the lake. It's a lot cooler near the lake, but we're trying to stay warm because at the beginning of the show, I told you it's kind of cold out there. But anyway, this is the analyst of the Republican debate not on CNN. It was in, CNBC. I guess it's a sister television network of MSNBC. Okay, and I'm hearing in back of me that it's Marco Rubio that actually stole the day. But from my standpoint, stole the day at the Republican debate, the third one. Okay, from my standpoint, if you don't talk about the needs of Americans and the needs of America, you've said nothing. I mean, you're interviewing for a job, for the top spot job, the number one job in the world, in the United States of America, and you get up there, and what do? You flounder, you lie, you argue, you criticize, you assault people, and you want, and you, and I'm going to say it again, you lie, you jab, you debate, you dodge, you evade questioning. And then if, when somebody throws a question your way, you decide if you want to answer it or not. Maybe you can't answer it. And then you arguing and bitching with everybody on the stage. It was a farce. It was more entertainment than anything. There is no doubt that the Democratic debate is a lot better than the Republican debate. There's substance there. There's no substance in the Republican debate. It's just a bunch of guys and a girl want to get their face on television. They want to get their face. Yeah, millions of Americans watch. But I'm going to tell you something right now. I bet you those 24 or 25 million Americans that watched that debate last night, they're probably laughing, busting a gut, because it was not a debate. It was a clown show. It was a clown show, no doubt about it. I mean, even if you were a Republican, a staunch Republican, you would probably say the same thing. It was a clown show because they're threatening to take money away from Jeb Bush because they felt that he had given a real poor performance, and he did. He did. He got up there attacking Marco Rubio instead of talking about what America needs and why he should be president. And he shouldn't be. He really should not be. I don't think he's going to last too long. I really don't think he's going to last that long, period. I don't think Chris Christie is going to last that long. They hardly got to him. And when they did, he talked about fantasy football or fantasy or something. He could have used his time to. A lot of times when the moderator calls on them to answer a question, they don't answer it. They pivot to something else. And then when the moderator say, hey, your time is up, then they, well, I didn't answer the question. Well, then you chose not to because you chose to talk about something else, which had nothing to do with the question and has nothing to do with America. All right, this is George Wilder Jr., George Wilder Jr. Show. I will be right back. Stay with me. Let me see if we can. You got a clip over there that you can play? Let's see. Here we go. Stay with me, everybody.
Thanks. We'll be right back.
right, it says here, by the end of the evening, Cruz, Carson, Trump, and Rubio, and several other candidates vying for the presidency of the United States 2016 had declared war on the press. Can you believe that? After this debate, this debacle, not a debate, but a debacle, was over, these guys are going after the press. The people who ask the questions and the people who write the papers and all of this kind of things, they're going after the press. The media, they're going after the media. When they're the ones who were up on stage and embarrassing themselves without the help of the media. The media, all the media is doing is just reporting what they're saying, reporting their behavior, and these guys are pissed. They are pissed. They claim to speak for the Republican Party, the American people, and the truth. Oh my God. Did they say they speak for the American people? The Republicans up on stage said they speak for the American people. They haven't said one damn thing pertaining to the American people. They speaking for themselves. The Republicans care about themselves, their own party, and the truth. It wasn't nothing but lies on that stage. Okay? These candidates are deluded. Okay? They are deluded. Many of their statements were falsified on the spot. They lied as they talked. Others were espoused as absurd. A lot of the things they said was absurd by their opponents and by the people at home who were watching that junk. Okay? All right. But it did, you know what, the truth that the debate exposed division within the country, but the division isn't between the press and the public. It's between the people who listen to evidence, you know, stuff like that. Okay, I'm reading a post from Warren Howlett, and this guy is a Facebook friend, and he is spot on just about on everything he posts about these these guys who can't stand the truth on stage. And then they go back and they blame the public. They blame the press. They blame the media for their missteps. They blame the media for their lies. They blame the media when they pivot away from a question and answer it the way they want to answer it or do not answer it at all. They blame the media. They blame the papers, the internet, and all that kind of stuff that's saying that they're not qualified to be president. Not one of them. And I think there are some people that have dropped out. Rick Perry dropped out. There's one or two others dropped out, but it's about 15 or 20 more of them up there, you know, running for president. And it's a damn shame because these people do not know what the hell they're talking about. Trump will never be president. Ben Carson, the sleepy doctor, neurosurgeon, he will never be president. Carly Fiorina, she will never be president. Marco Rubio, he will never be president. John Kasich, Chris Christie, Jeb Bush, these guys will never be president. Because they are not presidential material. I mean, we've seen these people, these Republicans. So far, we have seen these guys in three damn debates. And it was all the same. They didn't talk about, I'm going to run this list off again, they did not talk about gun control. As much as Americans are killing each other over guns and killing the innocent, they did not talk about guns, universal background checks, anything like that. They didn't talk about voting rights. How many times have you heard, especially in some of these southern states, Republican governors suppressing the vote, making it harder for African Americans or just people in general to vote. The reason why they're making it hard for you and I to vote, because they know that we're not going to vote for them. We're going to vote for the other side. That's why they're suppressing their vote, because if you don't vote, if they can keep you from voting, then they know that that's a vote for them. I've said this in many other shows. If you don't get out there and vote, do not think because you are not voting that your vote will not count. Your vote does count whether you vote or not. Because if you do not vote, you are voting for a Republican. You're voting for the 1%. This is why they suppress the vote. This is why suppressing the vote is stopping you from voting. Because if they can stop you from voting, they can stay in power forever. All right, they didn't talk about the economy. Jobs. They didn't talk about the infrastructure, minimum wage, things we want to hear. They didn't talk about the future of this country, their dreams, or what they see in the future for this country, the people. They didn't talk about infrastructure. I'm running this list again. Infrastructure. Nothing was said on that. Roads, streets, all this stuff out here that's deteriorating in front of our eyes, yet the government doesn't want to, you know, fund any kind of money to try to get these things fixed so you can drive smoothly across the roads, streets and roads and bridges. Hopefully a bridge won't collapse on you while you are driving across it, because these idiots in Washington, the Republicans, they don't want to fund infrastructure. Well, that's a big fat lawsuit if that should happen. They didn't talk about the middle class, the poor, the security of this country. They didn't talk about immigration. They didn't talk about Social Security. If they talked about Social Security, they're always talking about cuts. And that's another thing that brings to mind. Most seniors, most people who are on Social Security, they're not getting a raise for next year, 2016. Yeah, no raise. But you know what we're getting for 2016? We're getting a great big tax hike. A super duper tax hike in the city of Chicago. This man has the city council, and you've probably heard about it because it's the highest damn tax in the city of Chicago, and it's the highest damn tax in the history of the world. I mean, they're just putting tax on top of tax on top of tax on all the citizens in Chicago. If you live in Chicago, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Doesn't matter who you are, you are going to be affected. It doesn't matter. You can be a renter. You own your own home. You can be sleeping in a box outside there on a corner street. You're going to be affected. If you own a business, if you are a resident in Chicago, no matter what you're doing, you're going to be affected. Making minimum wage, making $10 or $20 an hour, you're going to pay. You're going to pay. And these taxes are on top of the county tax that they're trying to implement. She just got through implementing a tax. Now she wants to implement another tax. And get this, the Illinois legislature, they want to raise taxes. They're hitting the people in Illinois every which way. I'm going to tell you what they're doing. They are pricing us out of here. That's what they're doing. They are pricing us out of Illinois. 347-857-1762 if you want to chime in. Just sit back and listen. But they are pricing us out. Rents are going to rise. Mortgages are going to rise. Everything is going to go the hell up. If you're buying it, if you need it and you got to purchase it, it's going to cost you more. No matter what it is, it's going to cost you more. And it's going to cost you even more next year or next month or next whatever, because this is going to be incremental intervals. I think it's a city council voted in a $780 million tax hike or something to that effect. Yeah. Yeah. And they're crying, well, it was a hard vote to take. It wasn't hard. It was easy. It was easy. They just want to say it's hard because they know it's going to hurt a lot of people, drive a lot of businesses away, and people are going to be moving out of the city and out of the state as well as they should. I mean, this is the highest tax in the history of Chicago. Now, why pay this goddamn tax when you can move right next door to Wisconsin? Or you can go to Evanston. Evanston is right next door to me. I think this tax is going to backfire on the mayor and the city council because businesses are going to up and leave. People are going to be priced out where they can't afford it anymore, and they're going to leave. Moreover, people who can afford to leave the city of Chicago and in Illinois, they're going to do it. But people who cannot afford it, they're going to stay. But changes will have to be made. Just like these guys in government have to cut their budget, you and I have to cut our budgets. I mean, they just gave us, Chicagoans, the young people, they gave them a $10 an hour raise in the minimum wage. But with this property tax, it's wiped out. They done wiped it out. There's no more, you know. It's difficult. Basically what I'm saying, it's very expensive to live in the city of Chicago. It's very expensive. And jobs are here, but they're not that easy to get. It's very expensive to live in the city of Chicago. It was very expensive before this massive tax hike. It was way more expensive then, but it's out of control now. Even want to get up and move, you know. I want to get out of here because I don't want to, you know, these people are in your pocket. Every time I look around, the mayor's in your pocket. The governor's in your pocket. Cook County is in your pocket. They're all in your pocket. When you go to the grocery stores, in the produce department, I mean, everybody is in your fucking pocket. They want your money. They don't want to see you with anything. I've heard some people say, well, Chicago is going to become the next Detroit. That's a possibility. Boarded up homes, people leaving, businesses going, ghost towns. You know, it could happen. The taxes are just outrageous. They are outrageous. Then you got this rogue governor, Bruce Rauner, who is driving the state over a cliff. But what I'm hearing is, even though they voted in this massive tax hike, they are still going to need help from the state. And the state is saying, no way, no how. So just because they voted in this massive, massive property tax hike, we are not out of the woods. This is just too much. This is pricing people out. People are going to leave, period. I don't think Rahm Emanuel believes that. I don't think he's going to see people. I don't think he believes that people are going to just get up and move and businesses just going to get up and move out. It's happening right now. It was happening before this massive tax hike. See, they're not going to tell you that people are leaving. They're not going to tell you that businesses are relocating. They're not going to tell you that because they don't want you to think that. But if you have a brain of your own, you would know that is happening. You don't need them to tell you anything. You can look around your neighborhood, around your community, and you can see these things for yourself. This massive tax increase in this city is going to devastate a lot of people, especially homeowners and apartment dwellers, and each and everybody, the poor, the struggling poor. Television, news outlets. If you are in Chicago, you are going to feel it. You are going to feel it, especially if you're living from paycheck to paycheck. And there are so many people out here just working from one paycheck to the other. You miss one paycheck, you're homeless. Go and do this. They go and do something stupid. And now, what do you do? All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm ranting as you can always tell, but this is serious. This is serious. It's a massive tax hike. Totally massive tax hike. Okay, we'll be back. Be right back. Stay with me. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Well, another Republican presidential debate means another circus has come and gone. A circus. This is what the American people are calling this Republican debate, the third one on CNBC, a circus. And that's just about what it was. And the fourth one will be a circus. We've had three debates by these guys where they actually said nothing, anti-knowledge, or just anti-lies, anti-truth, actually, anti-truth. As I expected tonight, that night was more of the same of what we've seen during the first two Republicans GOP debates. A bunch of nothing, attacking each other, attacking the questioner, complaining about not getting much time to speak. You're not saying a damn thing anyway. Your mouth is just moving, but nothing significant is coming out of it. All right, tonight was especially pivotal when Donald Trump, he was slipping behind Ben Carson. Donald Trump really lost it when he found out that this guy, neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson, was ahead of him in Iowa. He lost it. He just completely lost it. This was not a debate for a job. This was a farce. This was a circus. This was entertainment, not very good entertainment, but entertainment. And as I've said before, not one of these Republican jacks is qualified to be president of the United States. Not one of them. Hillary Clinton is more qualified. Bernie Sanders is more qualified. Michael O'Malley is more qualified than any of these clowns. I think it was about 9 or 10 of them on stage, and there was about 4 or 5 of them debating earlier. So maybe it's about 14 or 15 of these guys all together, and not one lady, of course. Not one of them, in my view, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of others out there, are qualified to be president. They're not even qualified to be on that stage. You know, I didn't see one breakout candidate. If I had to put my finger on at least one breakout candidate on that stage, and I'll say this, fingers crossed, I would say Marco Rubio. But he has his problems too, because he's a very, very eloquent speaker. I think he's a very talented guy, but he has his issues also. And I have my issues with him. But generally speaking, not one of these guys. If you think that these guys are qualified, then just inbox me or whatever you want to do and tell me why. And believe me, I am not a Democrat, George. I am not a Republican. So I am not beholden to either party. Okay? I am an independent. There was one time I actually leaned toward being a Democrat, but they pissed me off so badly, I decided to become an independent. You know, there was one time I thought I could probably run for office, but the corruption just changed my mind. I didn't want to be around a bunch of corrupt politicians, and I didn't want any of that rubbing off on me, so I gave up any chance whatsoever running for office. As you know, and I'm going to do a show on this, as you know, Illinois is one of the most corrupt states in the history of the United States, and that's no lie. We have more people going to jail politically, politicians, than any other state in the union. We have more people going to jail. Every time I look around, somebody's going to jail for corruption. And I don't think it's going to stop. I do think that Bruce Rauner, the current governor, who hasn't been governor a year at the date of this broadcast, I think he's going to go to jail, because I do think it's got to be some sort of corruption in not doing your job and letting this state go under. That has to say something. And he is not doing his job by not getting a budget. And you know what? They are being called in a meeting November 19th, 18th or 19th to try and solve this. It's a bunch of groups around town who are getting these guys together to try to solve whatever problems they have, so in order to get a budget to take this state out of a big-ass hole that they put it in. Already, Bruce Rauner said he's going to attend. He's going to be a part of it, but a budget is not going to happen. This is what he said. He said, well, I'm going to be a part of the group. I'm going to be a part of getting together and talking about them. I mean, why would you call a meeting? Why would you want a meeting on the budget to try to figure out how to get this state moving forward? And then you're going to say you're not going to do it. Why call a meeting? Why waste that time? why go to a meeting if there's nothing is going to get done? But he's calling a meeting. I don't know. Maybe he's doing it for the press. Maybe he's doing it for the public. I don't know. But it's stupid. It's ignorant to call a meeting about the budget to not have a budget and refuse to get a budget. Then why call a meeting? It's crazy. So I'll do a show on this because, I mean, when I first became a radio talk show host, I had no idea that I was going to be talking about politics. I wanted to talk about being a writer and being an author. However, things change. Even though I do still talk about being a writer and being an author, it's just the politics just stink. And I just have to say something about them. And, you know, and it's always something every day, especially in the city of Chicago, always something every day to talk about. It's just a mess. And we're going to try and solve it. We're going to try and get it together. We're going to try and make some changes. That's why I'm here on the radio. As you probably know, I don't have a guest today, but I will have a guest November 1st, Sunday. So stay tuned for that, okay? And I will have guests periodically throughout November. So if you want to, if you're the kind that like to hear guests, stick around. And my first guest will be, she'll talk about Linda Katz. She's going to talk about the state of mental illness, and she has a book, and it's a great book. I've read parts of it. And she will be on the show November 1st, 6:30. So you guys stick in for that. She's going to talk about mental illness. I'm pretty sure we all know somebody with a mental illness. I know about 14 people with mental illnesses, and that was the Republican debate. All them people crazy, you know. So she'll be here, Linda Katz. You know, she's a lot of questions I have to ask, you know. So, and you stick around. I'm pretty sure we all know somebody with a mental illness. Maybe this show will help these people some kind of way. So you tell everybody I'm going to have a show, a guest here, Linda Katz. She's going to be talking about surviving mental illness, which is the name of her book. And if you know somebody with a mental illness, maybe you have one and you want to try to understand a little bit better, tune into the George Wilder Jr. Show, 6 o'clock Sunday, November 1st. Wow, November 1st. Wow, the year is gone. This year is just like gone with the wind. What can I say? You know, it's going to be 2016. I mean, where did 2015 go, right? And summer, I'm about to tell you, summer really wasn't summer. Summer went by too fast. That was like you walk around a corner, now it's fall, then you walk around the corner again, it's winter. So it just 2015 just blew by. Next thing you know, it's Thanksgiving. The next thing you know, it's Christmas. And that's a good thing. A lot of people are ordering presents and, you know, stuff over, I mean, you know, doing a lot of online buying. And watch your packages. I said this in a previous show because a lot of people are out here to steal packages, you know, packages that are left in the lobby or, you know, thrown over the fence in your yard or something. You have to watch out for your packages because the bad guys are out there to steal your packages, the things that you order online and have delivered through UPS, FedEx, Amazon, you know, so make sure you get your packages, all right? Because the guys are out there to get them, okay? All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I will be right back. Thank you for being there. Stay with me, everybody. All right. Yeah. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. I want to say that I am an author. I have plenty of books to read for you to read, for my audience to go check out. I write fiction. I've had people say, George, why don't you do a, since your show is about politics, why don't you do a political book? I really don't want to do a political book. I truly don't want to do a political book. I like doing fiction. I'm a storyteller. I like to tell stories. And that's basically most of my writings, if not 90% of it. I have done nonfiction. I have done it. It's great. It's wonderful. I think I've got a few things up on Amazon that are nonfiction, but the majority of my work is fiction. I love being a storyteller. I love taking the reader away on a trip or a vacation with words. And nonfiction is just you know, makes you think of reality which is what it is. And, you know, fiction is just a made-up story, but it has to be good. But let me say this on politics. Majority of my fictional material do have a political bent. There's something political going on in the book. You know, there's something as a president or there's a cabinet. There's something. There are always political bents in my books. You know, so if you go get like maybe Back in the Groove or something, there's a political bent there. If you get Ain't That a Groove, it's a political bent there. So even if you read some of my essays, there may be something in there that's kind of political. And if you read that stuff, you'll say, wow, he's a liberal. He's a Democrat. You know, but I am an independent. I am an independent. I'm not a bleeding heart liberal. No way, no how. So if you want to, you can check that stuff out. I mean, leave me a review or something. You know, I got a lot of stuff up there for 99 cents, you know, and it's good. It's great stuff. It's short stories, but even some of those are maybe politically motivated or politically something. There's something politically about the writing or something. Then again, it may not. Because I got a book up there, a short story called It Came From His Room. Now, there's nothing political about that. So you guys go check those books out. Check out my work on Amazon, georgewilderjr.com, and check those out, okay? All right. Here we go. We're back. Okay, well, Bernie and Hillary voted together 90%. Okay, in the years they shared the Senate. Okay, so I don't know what that means. I guess that means that they voted a lot more than the Republicans did, you know. So, and I want to say a little bit something about Bruce Rauner. I mean, I'm always talking about Bruce Rauner. If you listen to my shows, if you podcast them, you know. I want to say one more thing. I'm also in iTunes. You know, I'm in the iTunes store. You know, but most of my podcasts are free, and you can listen to them free. You know, I don't charge for anything. Some people do. I don't. And I'm not saying I don't need, excuse me. I'm not saying that I do not need the money. I just do not charge for them. All right. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Here's Obama on Big Pharma.
President this Obama has tapped cardiologist Roger Califf to head the FDA. Bernie Sanders has expressed concern with this choice, as have you. Why?
Well, President Obama's pick to new commissioner of the FDA is possibly the worst selection imaginable, and I don't say that in the mind of hyperbole. His pick, Robert Califf, is the former professor of cardiology at Duke University. He led a research department there and was funded by Big Pharma almost exclusively. It was the go-to place and is the go-to place for Big Pharma. They deal with issues dealing with science. More importantly, they deal with issues on regulations. They deal with issues on how do we continue charging 2,000 or 4,000% increases or markups on our drugs. This is the kind of stuff they talk about there at Duke. on top of conducting medical research or research on Big Pharma's dime. Califf is also a paid consultant for drug companies. They include Eli Lilly, Merck, Novartis. It's a very cozy relationship with the pharmaceutical industry, considering that they funded this man's entire career, Tom. Mm-hmm. He's made all of his serious money from the industry. And I guess the worst thing about it is, aren't we a little tired of seeing this from President Obama? Aren't we a little tired of remembering that this is the guy who was going to clean up the FDA? He was going to clean up Daniel Troy's disaster of the FDA. Daniel Troy, you'll remember, was appointed by Bush. He did more harm, put more dangerous drugs on the market, probably than anybody who'd been in charge of that department. So here comes Obama and says, we're going to clean that up the same we're going to clean up Wall Street. So here's the short list of Califf's accomplishments on behalf of Big Pharma. He's been an outspoken critic of regulations on the drug industry. He said that the FDA is too slow to approve new drugs. And I'm talking about not necessary drugs. I'm talking about optional drugs, where you might have 10 drugs on the market that do the same. This guy, Califf, says it doesn't make any difference whether it's a critically needed drug or whether it's just another drug that's a cash cow for the pharmaceutical industry. He thinks testing requirements are too strict for drug companies. This is the guy that Obama says, yeah, I want him in charge. The same way we saw, whether it's the FCC, where he puts Tom Wheeler in there, whether it's SEC, where he puts Mary Jo White in there, all from industry. He is joined at the hip with industry, and it's taken the American public, only those paying attention, to understand that he has absolutely, completely lied to the American people about who he is. And the Califf story tells it very clearly. This is a guy that helped fund two separate drug company startups, Tom. Califf says that collusion between the industry and the government is the wave of the future. Think about that. His statement that collusion between the industry and government is the wave of the future. Why in the hell should we even have a regulatory entity if that's the way this guy thinks?
You're really speaking to a much larger problem, are you not, Mike? The revolving door, the money in politics, the politicians, apparently including President Obama, who kowtow to you know, wealth and power, basically, in this case, the pharmaceutical industry, rather than concerning themselves with the business of the people.
Well, it is true, but here we're talking about human life at stake. The SEC issues with Wall Street, people may lose their entire life savings, as we've seen so many times before. But in this situation, look, the FDA already relies on testing performed and funded by drug companies for 60% of their approvals. This means that the agency is already letting Big Pharma police itself, and that's exactly what Califf wants to do more of. When you put a Califf in office, what ends up happening is you kill people. And this is a guy who has shown that he is willing, that he thinks there's an acceptable risk to kill people. And the argument being, well, we want the research to be more...
Hey, happy Halloween, everybody. Happy Halloween. This is actually Thursday the 29th. And Halloween is, I think, 2 days from now, Saturday. So if you're listening to this belated broadcast, you know that... It's 2 days before Halloween. Okay, happy Halloween. I wanted to post that somewhere, but I didn't get a chance. Okay, but the reason why I said it, happy Halloween, because I'm looking at Facebook. I'm looking at my Facebook page, and some friends posted happy Halloween to George. I said, okay, let me say happy Halloween while I'm on the air here. And I thought I'd say that. My son, he doesn't care anything more about Halloween. He's only 16. He doesn't care anything much about Halloween much. He's too old. But I remember taking him when he was, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, and he loved it. He loved it. We would go out and get some candy, and we'd sit down and eat it together. Okay. Can't do that now. I'm getting too old, and the teeth are kind of weak. Okay. It's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. All right. So happy Halloween. And I got to respond to the friend of mine, that the person who sent happy Halloween greeting to me. That's great. That's wonderful. Okay, back to some of the debate before I go off the air. My great concern is that we are on the verge, perhaps, of picking someone who cannot do this job, Mr. Kasich said. Obviously, he's talking about Donald Trump. He said we are on the verge of picking someone who can't do the job. This is a snipe at Donald Trump. He's saying a fellow Republican is saying that Donald Trump cannot do the job. And Donald rips him back. Mr. Trump rips into Mr. Kasich for turning the negative, against his rivals. I'm sorry, barely said the word. He was such a nice guy. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm never going to attack, Mr. Trump said, you know. But then his poll numbers tank and he got, okay, his poll numbers tank, and that's when he said, oh, it's going to end. I got to attack him, you know, Kasich placement on the debate stage. You know, I mean, this is crazy. Several candidates face tough questionings about their financial policies. Mr. Carson defended his plan to radically overhaul the tax system. He said he said that he would take the inspiration from God and push for a proportional tax system based on teething, whatever that is, in which people would pay the same percentage, close to 15%. I don't think Ben Carson knows nothing that he says, because if you're reading it, if you're listening to it, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Just like I said before earlier in the show, you can watch this guy on one interview, on one video, being interviewed and saying something. And then someone will ask him about something that he said in that interview as he's giving another interview, and he will say he didn't say it. You know, so I don't know. Maybe he has a brain cramp or something. But anyway, he's not qualified to be president. And I don't know why, how in the hell this man is leading Donald Trump in Iowa. He's ahead of Donald Trump. At one time, Ben Carson, the neurosurgeon, the black guy, Ben Carson was ahead of Donald Trump nationally, not just in Iowa, the whole damn United States. He was ahead, but now I think he's a few points behind. People are figuring out this man doesn't have it all. He's an African-American. He's a Republican. Screwed. He's a liar. He's unfit to be president of the United States. And I'm not the only one that's saying that. I'm reiterating some of the things that other people are saying, or I am totally agreeing, because I have watched Ben Carson. I totally want to say that this guy is qualified. I totally want to say that somebody's on that Republican stage, that in that Republican debate, is qualified to be president. I can't say that because none of them are. If I had to pick and choose a person, it probably would be Marco Rubio. Rand Paul, I don't know what happened to Rand Paul. All I know is that he's on the stage, but the media obviously didn't give him a chance to speak, or didn't give him enough time to speak, or forgot that he was on the stage, because I haven't heard anything from Rand Paul. This is just a clown show. So another talk show host calls it the Bozo Bus. And this is what this is. I mean, Jeb Bush is in a lot of trouble. And every time you see Jeb Bush, every time you see him, he acts as though nothing's wrong. But anytime you're cutting staff, cutting pay, there's something wrong. Anytime your donors say you better straighten up or you're going to lose money, there's something wrong. Anytime somebody want to take some money out of your pocket because you're not doing good, there is something wrong. And he proved that in the debate yesterday. I mean, he got his butt handed to him. And one of the people said on the stage, one of the presidential candidates, and I believe it was Donald Trump, most of the guys and girls in Congress are bought and paid for. Most of the guys and girls that was on that stage are bought and paid for. Trump is not bought and paid for. He has his own money. Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, Ted Cruz, Huckabee. You hardly heard anything from Huckabee. Just about everybody up there bought and paid for except for Trump. Cardi Fiorina. They know if they don't do a good job in the debate, the donors are going to pull the money. And when they pull the money, their presidential dreams are over. They're over. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just giving you my feedback, my thoughts on it. And, you know, these guys just didn't do a good job. They did not talk about the issues. They did not talk about policy. They talked about media not being fair to them. They're talking about the press that's not being fair to them. They're criticizing each other. They're going after each other's neck. They're assaulting, verbally assaulting each other on stage where 24, 25 million people are watching. And then they're blaming the press because they're getting negative press. When it's the words or lack of words coming out of their mouth. This is crazy. You know, I mean, all over the newspapers, every damn newspaper is saying the same thing. These people are know-nothings, knowledge. They lack experience. They lack talking about the budget. They lack talking about the issues or the policies. They talked about nothing but themselves. And they criticized the other people on the stage with them. Then they start bullying the media, the moderators. This was nothing, totally nothing. And this is why and this also includes Ben Carson. He cannot escape this. He wasn't nothing either. All right, This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Make sure you go check out my writings on Amazon and my website, georgewilderjr.com, and check that stuff out. It's pretty good. It's pretty decent. I have to say, I write nothing that I wouldn't write anything that I wouldn't want to read. Basically, all I do is fiction. Okay, let's see if we can find we're going to take a break right here. I will be right back, and then we're going to sign off. Thanks, everybody. We got it. Is it coming? Okay, there it is.
And the master.
It's over? I must have missed it. Anyway, here's a promo.
You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on the Wilder Network. WTTTY, the talk of our times. You miss a show, you will miss a hell of a lot. Thank you for listening and stay with me.
I'm off the air. I must have went off before it came. All right. Okay.